Welcome to the University of California San Francisco Sports Medicine Podcast featuring Dr. Nirav Pandya, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdown discussing hot topics in sports medicine and society. We hope you enjoy our podcast and look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 68 weeks with myself, Dr. Nirav Pandya, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdown. Today, myself, Dr. Nirav Pandya, I'll be going solo on this podcast to give you some of my insight on the current state of the youth sports crisis. Now, as many of you know, the way that we play youth sports has changed dramatically over the past 10 to 15 years. For many of us growing up, particularly who are in our 30s, 40s, and 50s, we played multiple sports throughout the year. We were three-sport athletes in high school. We had different seasons, and we simply played the sports. And potentially, if we were able to go on to the next level, whether that be collegiate or professionally, that was a secondary outgrowth of our pure joy in just playing sports. But what we've seen over the past 10 to 15 years is a tremendous change in how kids are playing sports. Rather than playing multiple sports and playing sports simply for fun, we're seeing a lot of our youth specialize at younger and younger ages because they want to get to that next level. For them, sports is not necessarily something you enjoy, but it's a means to an end. So at ages 3, 4, 5, and 6, what kids are doing now is not necessarily learning body control, learning about balance, learning about the things that they should be learning in terms of how to be healthy for the next 15, 20, 30, 70 years. But they're learning how to kick a soccer ball, how to throw a baseball, how to throw a softball, how to work on their swimming form. And that's problematic. And we're seeing this covered in a national area. There's the New York Times, which has covered this. Baxter Holmes from ESPN did a great article looking at youth basketball. This is something the media is learning more and more about and is beginning to write about a lot more. But the unfortunate problem is that the parents and the coaches and the athletes who need to know this the most just simply aren't changing the way that they're participating in sports. And that's problematic. There's a great website called the Stop Sports Injuries website that has a lot of great data. And I encourage all parents and athletes or coaches maybe listening to this to go onto that website. One of the things that they talk about on this website is that 50% of all youth athletes will suffer at least one significant injury a year. Now, that's a large number. If you think back to your junior high days, you think back to when you're in high school, there were very few of us who got a significant enough injury where we had to go to the emergency room, where we had to go to an orthopedic surgeon. And now I see 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds in my clinic who know orthopedic lingo, who know what surgery is going, what the recovery is going to be. And that's a manifestation of the way that our kids are playing sports. And where a lot of this comes from is the fact that children are playing sports in different areas. There are currently 5.5 million children who are playing in-school sports and 30 million children who are playing out-of-school sports. And the fact is that when club teams and coaches are controlling our children's athletic activity, it's going to lead to injury. Another major problem that's happening is that PE is missing in our schools, whether that be at the junior high or the high school level. There was a recent study that said that only 29% of all high school students participate in daily physical education classes. Now, some of us hated climbing the rope. We hated doing sit-ups. We hated stretching. We hated the mile run. When you actually think about the components of physical activity, which actually make you a better athlete, prevent injury, it was those aspects of things. And we think of it from more of a global aspect. We have this whole group of kids who are specializing in sports, who have the money to do so, and are getting the severe injuries. And then you're dropping these PE classes. You're dropping things like high school physical education. And then there isn't an outlet for these other kids who can't play club sports. And they had to deal with the problems of obesity, depression, diabetes, et cetera, that they're going to have in their late teen years, as well as in adulthood. So we definitely have this problem where we have two groups of kids. And the problem is heightened right now because I think there's a lot more pressure for kids to perform well. We're in a culture where kids need to get a scholarship. They want to be a star on social media. Their parents want to be known for something in the community. And sports is an easy way where some kids can actually get that notoriety. But unfortunately, the vast majority of kids will actually go down the route of being injured or dropping out of sports. So I like to use this example with my patients who come in. In terms of the youth sports athlete, the surgical aspect of things is easy. We know what surgeries we need to do. The clinical part of things is easy. We can make the diagnosis. But the non-clinical part of things, the social, emotional, the coach, the parent, the sibling, that's the hard part. And one of the examples I like to use is when you think of someone like Stephen Curry, who plays for the Warriors, when he doesn't play, that means millions of dollars for the Warriors. But they treat him with extreme caution. They'll hold him out a long period of time. They want to make sure that he heals. But when I get a youth athlete in my clinic who has something like an ACL tear, or has a large cartilage injury, these parents are pushing because they want to get their kids back sooner. And the only consequence of that kid not playing is the father or mother may internally feel he's not going to get a scholarship. And we don't treat our youth athletes with that same degree of caution. And that's problematic. And the trend that we're seeing is that these young athletes are specializing at younger and younger ages. And when you break down kids into the young age group, the under 14 age group, more than 3.5 million children are treated annually for sports injuries. These are kids who have immature bones, who aren't resting, they have poor training and conditioning, and where that's where you're seeing this increase in ACL injuries. You're seeing the increase in ulnar collateral ligament injuries. We're seeing the increase in overuse injuries because of this age group that is participating and stressing their body in a way that it's simply not designed to do so. Another poignant example of this was a study that was done at Columbia University where they surveyed 200 youth baseball pitchers. And they actually found that 75% of them had pain while throwing, 80% of them had pain the day after. And the thing that really, really troubles me, that 50% of them were encouraged to stay in the game even when they had pain. Another area where we see this is in ACL injuries, and I touched on before, there's a 400% increase in youth ACL tears over the past decade. This isn't because our MRI technology is better. This isn't because we're doing something different in terms of our examination. It's the fact that kids are playing sports, and the group that suffers most from this is female basketball players and female soccer players. And we could have a whole another podcast on why females are more prone to get ACL injuries, but the ones who are bearing the brunt of this ACL epidemic are these young females who are playing club sports and specializing at a younger and younger age. Another question I get asked by my parents or by the residents or the fellows is, why is this happening now? I grew up in the Michael Jordan era. Michael Jordan, quote unquote, played multiple sports both in high school and took a little break in Chicago. But in the LeBron era, why now? Why are kids playing one sport instead of playing multiple sports in the past? And I think a lot of that has to do with the cost of college. If you look at various studies or various kind of analyses of how much college costs now, the number runs between $200,000 and $250,000 for a four-year college. So as a result, naturally, parents feel pressure to somehow figure out a way to pay for this. Children feel the pressure as well too. And we live in a society where a lot of people want to basically succeed and to obtain something that differentiates them from somewhere else. So they turn to the 10,000 hour rule. And if some of you have not heard, the 10,000 hour rule was basically proposed by someone named Erickson, who said that in order to achieve expertise as a musician, interestingly enough, not as an athlete, you must practice 10,000 hours within that specialized field. So as a result, we have these young kids who are 8, 9, 10, or 11 who decide to say, I'm just a year-round baseball player. I'm a year-round soccer player. I'm a year-round gymnast. And as a result, they don't play other sports and their body suffers the negative effects. And you combine that with the problem of youth sports and the industry behind it, where there's tons of money invested in it, it's problematic. You can see when there wasn't COVID and people weren't playing, although that's a whole other topic about people still holding youth sports tournament in this pandemic. You'll see showcases for baseball, AAU tournaments that are happening every weekend, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds going across the country to basically play sports and to somehow get a college scholarship. And there's money involved with this. And that's very, very problematic. And it's basically profiting off parents' desires to have their kids get a scholarship for these coaches and for these clubs and for these events to make money. And if you just look around your parks, pre-pandemic, people just weren't playing sports. When was the last time you saw a pickup basketball game pre-pandemic outside on the courts? When did you see people just playing basketball for fun? People want to build their brand, so they don't want to do something now because they feel that they're not going to get anywhere. They feel that it's not going to let them be a social media star. And as a result, people aren't just playing in an unorganized fashion. And as a result, we're seeing tons of kids drop out of sports. By age 13, 70% of kids will drop out of youth sports. And the top three reasons they cite are adults, coaches, and parents. The problem that I face is I'm treating these youth athletes with our surgeries to go back to an environment which at baseline is detrimental for their bodies with limited potential gain. When I have that 14-year-old who's already on their second ACL reconstruction who wants to go back to club sports, it's great that we have these phenomenal surgical techniques, that we have these rehab protocols to get them back, but I'm sending them back into an environment which is not good for them to begin with. And I will get a subset of parents and coaches who will say, look, we have to do this because this is the only way I can get to be a professional, or I know someone who actually went professional. There's a high likelihood that if I do this, I'll get to the professional level. But if you actually look at the statistics, only 0.006% of high school athletes will become professional. Well, then you get another subset of parents who will say, you know what, they may not go professional, but I don't get that scholarship. Only 2% based on NCAA data of high school athletes will actually get a college athletic scholarship. And the most stunning data is the average college athletic scholarship is $11,000 over a four-year period. And even more stunning is that only six sports, football, men's and women's basketball, women's gymnastics, volleyball, and tennis, actually give full scholarships. So you think about that. Soccer and baseball, which are some of the biggest issues in terms of travel sports, you can't even obtain a full scholarship. And the average athletic scholarship is $11,000. You put together two to three, sometimes even one season of club sports, and you've already overpaid for a college athletic scholarship. If you look at NCAA data, actually the best chance that you have to get a college scholarship is to play men's ice hockey. 13% almost of, 11% of athletes who play men's ice hockey will get a scholarship. But if you look at most of the other data, you're looking at the 2, 3, 4, 5%. So we do know that the single sport specialization won't lead to an athletic scholarship, but it will lead to kids dropping out of sports. It leads to injury. It leads to isolation, and it leads to poor adult health. And a great book that I recommend that you all read is by David Epstein called The Sports Gene. And one of the points he drives home in that book is that elite athletes specialized in one sport later and were more likely to play multiple sports throughout high school. So not only are you increasing your chance of playing sports longer, you're decreasing your injury risk, and you're more likely to succeed if you play multiple sports. And that's been backed up by tons of data from Europe that showed the kids who played multiple sports longer were better at their individual sport that they chose later on down the road. And if you look at this study, this has also been held true at the collegiate level. There was a great study done out of UCLA that found that the vast majority of Division I athletes had actually participated in multiple sports as children, with the vast majority not specializing until later age. The other thing that we also find is that the hours that kids are playing is extremely important as well, too. There was a great study done by Neurogianti who examined 1,200 athletes and found that the athletes who spend more hours per week playing their sport than their age were 70% more likely to experience severe injury. So once again, the sheer volume of sport you're playing, the fact that you're playing a single sport leads to this epidemic of single sport specialization and injuries. So the best advice I can give you as a potential athlete, as a coach, as a parent, is have your kids play multiple sports for longer. If you're concerned about an athletic scholarship, it may potentially place you in a better level. More importantly, it's going to keep your kid playing sports and prevent injury. Now, one of the things I touched on, which is forgotten all this, is how much youth sports has become an industry. There was a study done by TD Ameritrade that said that youth sports have become a $15.3 billion industry. 63% of parents will pay between $100 to $500 per month, with nearly 20% paying upwards of $12,000 a year. If you look at that average scholarship amount, the amount that a child will incur cost-wise for some of these club sports will far exceed their college scholarship amount. And this doesn't account for the expenses from injuries, the time away from work, and the pure mental burden of having these injuries and having to perform at such a young age. The Aspen Institute has really well described the disparity that exists in club sports. And one of the other things that we have a tendency to forget, which I unfortunately think will get heightened in the pandemic, is that people who have the opportunity to pay to play have access to youth sports. The Aspen Institute has a great statistic that says that only 34.6% of children between the ages of 6 to 12 in families who make under $25,000 a year participate in team sports, whereas those with incomes greater than $100,000 a year, 68.4% of them participate. Furthermore, if you look at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, it says that only 25% of middle and high school students from low-income areas participate in youth sports due to fees, transportation, and equipment costs. So once again, this tells you that if you have the opportunity to play, you will get your opportunity to be physically active. As I mentioned, physical education is dropping. Kids are not being able to participate at the school level. And if you don't have the money to play club sports, you're not going to have the opportunity to be active. And we see that right now in the pandemic. Club sports are running right now. People who have the money to play are actually going out and playing right now. Those kids are being active. But if you want to play rec sports, they don't exist at the same level. Because schools aren't having sports right now, those kids are not playing sports as well too. And then you think about the economic burden, what will happen post-pandemic to a lot of these families who may be lower or middle income, is the fact is playing $500 a month for a club sports scholarship, a club sports participation, their family may not be able to actually afford it. So these kids are going to have less access to sporting activity. And what that means for our adult health over the next 15 to 20 years is very troubling to me. We just need kids to get out there and play sports so they can be active and so that they can get the physical activity that they need to be healthy. And finally, I'll end on the fact that people will say, well, you know what? Scholarships are really important, and kids who may need them from lower or middle income areas where may have other circumstances, we need to allow them to specialize in order to get to the next level. But unfortunately, when you look at the data, those are the kids who aren't even getting the scholarships. There was a great article in Undefeated that said that college athletic scholarships are more likely to be athletes of higher socioeconomic status than the average student and less likely to be first generation college students. So even when we're chasing these scholarships, the kids who are getting them are ones who have the opportunity to pay to play for these club sports and then show up to these showcases and get these scholarships. The individuals and families who need them the most aren't getting them. Now, one of the things that we'll get a lot of in our clinic as I kind of wrap up here is we know that sports specialization increases injury risk. There have been multiple studies done by the likes of Neeru Jayanthi, David Bell, Cynthia Labella. These are all been well established in the literature. But the question that still gets asked a lot is it necessary to achieve elite athletic performance? Now, I touched on this a little bit earlier, but when you look at the data, is it really necessary to get to that next level? Is that what you need to do to become the Kyler Murray, who played two sports, the Bo Jackson, who played two sports, the Deion Sanders, who played two sports? What are the long-term adult health implications? Is it really worth the risk? So the first thing we have to look at is how does sports specialization impact short-term athletic performance? And we know that studies by Abernathy and Franson, who've shown that you actually are a better athlete if you do multiple sports. We know that. We also know that it increases injury risk and it increases your chance of getting a college athletic scholarship, which was some of that UCLA data. If you dive in a little bit further, there's another study that was done by Charles Popkin that found the mean age of specialization of Division I athletes was nearly 15 years. Early sports specialization was uncommon among NCAA Division I athletes for most team sports. There's a misconception that in order to get a college scholarship at the team sports level, you have to be specializing early. In fact, if you specialize later, you are more likely to play a team sport in college. Another study that was done by the group out of Rothman also looked at 3,000 athletes. And they found that the age of sports specialization for those who went on to play collegiately was higher than that in a high school. You've also seen this in hockey players, there's been wrestlers, there's multiple other data which shows this. But then the question becomes, how does it actually impact your midterm athletic performance? Y'all parents will come in and say, I'm willing to take the risk if it is the only pathway to professional sports for my child. They know that single sport specialization increases injury risk, but they tell me they can't become a professional athlete unless you're healthy and on the field. That's what I tell them. They can't become a professional athlete unless they're healthy and on the field. But they're still willing to take that risk because they see that article about Christian Pulisic. They see that article about Bryce Harper. They see that article about Tiger Woods and feel that you need to be singularly focused in order to get to that next level. But if you actually look at the professional sports data, the story is different. We did a study with myself and Dr. Feely looking at the effects of playing multiple sports on NBA players' propensity for injury and athletic performance while they were in high school. We found that those multi-sport athletes who participated in multiple sports in high school and then went on to the NBA, participated in more games, experienced fewer major injuries, and had longer careers than those who participated in a single sport. If you look at the NFL Combine from 2015 to 2018, 88% of the athletes at the Combine participated in multiple sports. If you look at Major League Baseball, there was a study that was done that looked at early sports specialization in Major League Baseball players. And they found a statistically significant higher rate of serious injury during a baseball player's professional career in those who specialize early. They also stated that most current professional baseball players surveyed believe that sports specialization was not required prior to high school to master the skills needed to play at the professional level. And if you even look at these single sport athletes in Major League Baseball, the ones who may have specialized at a younger age, their performance isn't getting better. They're just peaking at an earlier age. So when they used to peak at 24, 25, they're now peaking potentially at 19, 20, 21. So they're not getting better. They're just curve at which their performance is going is much earlier. And even when you look at individual sports like track and field, there's studies that have looked at athletes who perform very, very well at the junior level, at the youth level,
And then they then disappeared at the international level, at the senior level. So once again, being a really good junior runner doesn't mean you're going to excel at that next level. So even in an individual sport such as track and field, that doesn't hold true. And I think another way to look at it is look at human performance metrics. You would assume, or some would assume, that by specializing, the actual ability for the human to perform better in certain activities would increase. But if you look at pre-2000 versus post-2000, the 100-meter world record was 9.79. Post-2000 is 9.58. Now, if you take out Usain Bolt and perhaps one or two other runners, the 100-meter time has pretty much stayed the same. If you look at the mile time, 3:43.13, same time, pre-2000, post-2000. You look at the marathon, it's gone down about 4 minutes, but a lot of that can be attributed to shoe technology. If you look at the long jump, 29 feet, 4 inches, same record, pre-2000, post-2000. Home runs, strikeouts, baseball metrics, pre-post-steroids, pre-post-specialization, it all looks the same. So once again, even in some of the metrics that we can actually measure, we don't see an improvement in athletic activity in the midterm. So what can we say? We can say that sports specialization is not required for elite athletic performance. Peak performance is potentially occurring earlier, but your actual athletic performance isn't improving. It's not making you a better athlete, even when you look at professional data. And finally, and how does the sports specialization impact long-term health? Well, I think if we're getting kids who are dropping out of playing sports at a young age, the fact that they're going to be active and healthy older is difficult. We have rising rates of obesity, rising rates of diabetes, rising rates of cardiovascular disease. And if kids aren't healthy and active because they've dropped out of sports, that's problematic. And the kids who are healthy and active around their fourth ACL surgery by the time they're 25, or they have a big cartilage injury, they're going to have increased rates of arthritis. So from a long-term standpoint, we think that, and know potentially, the single sport specialization is actually going to lead to more injuries and less beneficial adult health in the future. And I think that's important to note. So in conclusion, I think one of the things we need to really look at is why youth sports injuries are an epidemic level. We know the single sport specialization is bad. We know it's leading to epidemics in terms of ACL injuries and throwing injuries. The fact is how our society is changing. We're dropping unstructured sport time. Economics is driving the specialization, and parents and coaches just don't know the data as to why they shouldn't be doing a single sport. It's going to lead to injury. It's not going to increase your chance of going to the next level. And it's leading to a disparity in physical activity, which we as clinicians need to change. And one of the things we can do is play multiple sports, try to encourage there to be more recreational activities, and push schools to be able to open up those sport school-based activities so the kids can participate. Once again, this is Dr. Neera Pandya. Thank you for joining our podcast. And I look forward to having you listen to our other podcasts in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the University of California, San Francisco Sports Medicine Podcast featuring Dr. Neera Pandya, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdowne. We look forward to hearing your feedback and hope you look forward to our next episode. Thank you.